True Believers. Sean O'Rama here. On my way home from work. Doing another episode of the podcast. On the road. Heading into season 2 of the podcast. Which is kind of interesting. We've managed to... and by we, I mean me. Because there's only me here. I've managed to... get basically a whole season's worth of stuff done. Sorry, I'm just driving here, and some of these people don't know how to drive. So anyway, so season 2, I've changed locations for the podcast. Most of you have been viewing the podcast from the Facebook side of things, or from the Twitter side of things. And most of you actually don't go to where the podcast is hosted, which is fine. But I've changed providers. I'm now over on at Podbean and giving those guys a crack at the podcast and see what they can do for me. So that's the new home. If you are looking for me on the web, not through Facebook or not through Twitter, you can find me at Podbean. So there you be. So... this particular podcast, we're going to talk about storytelling. Now, as those that know me know that I'm a writer, is probably my most predominant thing that I do out of all the many things that I do outside of the workplace. And novel writing, yep, done it. Comic writing, yep, done it. Screenwriting, yep, done it. But what I want to put some emphasis on and is the process of writing and what it means. So really what I want to get into here is some forms of writing receive less notoriety. Is that really what I want to call it, I guess? Damn it, there's a train. This is going to be a long effing ride home. Anyway, so when it comes to writing, if you've written a novel, the novel is viewed by the general public as real writing. I would hazard a chance to say I've done lots of comic book writing in my life. And, you know, even when I talk to my dad or talk to my family, like, oh, he wrote some comic books. It's not a big deal. Oh man, this is ugly. This is freaking baloney, man. The train in both directions. I am stuck between, sandwiched between two effing trains. How is that even freaking possible? Oh, whatever. Anyway. My dad was worked for the rail. And if he saw the way they scheduled the trains here, he would be on the phone right now calling someone in management to find out why are you guys running trains in the middle of rush hour on both tracks that envelop this effing work area. Unbelievable. Yeah, and it's getting me off track here. Okay, so back to what I was saying. So, if you are a novel writer... you're viewed very well. If you're a screenwriter, I think you're not viewed as well. It's not real writing. If you're a comic book writer, you're even further down the scale. And that's what I've experienced, because I mean, I do a lot of writing and a lot of different things and a lot of different styles. So me telling people, hey, I'm a comic book writer, they're like, yeah, so what? Big deal. If I say I'm written a novel, oh, you've written a book. I don't know. You get a different, completely different reaction. Now, here's the writer that's at the bottom of all of those piles. The game writer. Yes, I write games too. What do you mean by games? Role-playing games. Dungeons and Dragons, Pathfinder, those sorts of things. For as long as I can remember, long after I started gaming, tabletop gaming, role-playing, I've been writing my own games, create my own world to put the people in. And I, you know, I create the world and I tell the story and I craft the story. The writing on that side is a lot more difficult. It's a completely different animal. It's a lot more complicated than writing a novel. It is a bigger take of my time. It takes a lot longer to create the world to play the game in, to maintain the game as the game's master, the dungeon master, and the upkeep of the information is far more complicated, far more intense, and far more lengthy. So out of all the forms of writing that I've tried or that I do, the most complicated form of writing is game writing. By and large, the most complicated of any kind of writing. Now, some forms of writing, are far more intense in novel writing. Some forms of writing are far more intense, take longer. If we're talking about fantasy writing is very lengthy. You're doing world creation or science fiction for that matter. You're basically creating a world and creating characters in that world, but it's still not as intensive as creating a game, in my humble opinion, whether my opinion matters or not. But as I've said, I did write a science fiction book. Is it on the market? No. Unfortunately, a lot of my stuff is not on the market, but that's a whole story for another time. Suffice to say that writing the science fiction book was difficult. There was a lot of steps involved, but every game I've written has taken a lot more effort to put together. Because you're not just creating a world for your characters to play in. You're creating a world where your characters could potentially play in, might potentially play in, and you have to anticipate them playing in. But the whole writing process is different too. When you're writing a game, what you are doing is you are writing with other people, is the way to look at it. When everyone is sitting around that table, so once you've done all your planning and you finally get down to, okay, I'm running the game, you got your players sitting around the table and you're running the game, everything that you've come up with is being tested by those players. So you may have an idea of where your story is going to go, but ultimately, and the best GMs do this, you can lead your players all you want, but your players decide where the story is going to go. And being able to think on your feet like that is very, very difficult. It's improvisational writing. You can't, when you're inventing stuff on the spot like that, you are basically working with a bunch of people to create the storyline and reacting to what they're doing to continue the storyline. It is probably, and I think the reason I enjoy that form of writing so much is because I'm a musician. I sing in a band. If you follow the podcast, you know full well, you know, I've been a musician almost as long as I've been a writer. So it blends what I love about performing on a stage and writing. I love writing. I really, really enjoy writing. But writing for a game and running and game mastering a game or dungeon mastering a game is like performing. You are playing with the crowd, performing to the crowd, but you're also reacting to the crowd. So what happens is you lay out a scenario, the players play the scenario, but here's where it differs, like it's different, is that they're shouting out a request for a song for you to play. Do you know what that song is? Doesn't matter if you do or don't, you better figure it out real darn quick. You gotta be able to think on your feet and jump right back into the song, whatever they're requesting. It's improvisational. It is almost like improvisational theater or stand-up comedy, improvisational comedy. It's pretty darn cool, incredibly rewarding. And I am at a weird place here. Hopefully I don't. There we go. Wow, that was a very difficult maneuver, traffic maneuver I just performed there. Anyway, so I apologize, guys. This is like the weirdest freaking car ride. I left work early, and now I'm going through a different, whole different set of traffic than what I'm used to. It's less busy in certain areas and way more busy in other areas. It's all effed up. So anyway, so where am I going with this? So let's go down the list. So this is probably at the bottom of the list. Writing a game, oh, it doesn't take any skill, blah, blah, blah. You're not really telling a story, blah, 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 blah. You know, some people don't think it's all what it's supposed to be. Or that it's not, you're not really writing, or you're not really creating, or, you know, whatever it is. When you're creating your own game, man, that is like the biggest, hardest writing block to get through. Improvisational, it's crazy. So here, let's look at another type of writing. Now, comic book writing is really looked down upon as well. And the reason for it, I'm not really sure. Comic books still don't, I mean, they get a lot better press than they have in the past, thanks to all these movies that are out. But comic book writers have never been celebrity. If you get a novelist, Stephen King writes a book. Holy crap, everyone freaks out, it's a big deal. He's a writer. If you get, I don't know, Kurt Busiek or Grant Morrison, these people do get respect, but not the level of a Stephen King. Even though the output of these guys is really prolific, and maybe I shouldn't be making the comparison to... You know what? Maybe I shouldn't be making a comparison at all. Stephen King, his output is ridiculous. It's amazing. He writes more like a comic book guy if you think about it. But comic book writers just don't get the respect. And there's probably two reasons for it. What I find is when I was writing scripts, comic book scripts, I had no model to follow. So I've loved comics for as long as I can remember. And when I started writing comic books, it wasn't... I mean, I didn't have instruction on doing it. I didn't have, oh, well, this is how the script should look. This is what you put in it. And what I learned through the years, I just started writing my own scripts. I based it off whatever I could glean anywhere. But I based it off of a movie script. And what I found was in a movie script, you have a lot more leeway, because I've done script writing as well. I was a script doctor on a movie called Hurt that eventually was never released, but whatever. The idea is script writing is you're giving general direction, and you are also giving... you're giving general direction of what's happening in the scene, and then you're also sharing the conversation. But when you're talking about comic book writing, which is also called a script, it's different. There's so many different ways of doing it, and it's all based on the artist you're working with. And you may actually find yourself formatting the script in a different way to accommodate who you're working with. When I first started comic script writing, I was incredibly detailed. And I think it came off of a basis of seeing an Alan Moore script and going, oh, that's how you write a script. So I followed Alan Moore's base of how he writes a script. His comic scripts are a lot different than most of the writers out there. He is very descriptive. He's very specific and what he wants the artist to do. And he basically, he is not just, if you want an equivalent comic book writing to movie writing, Alan Moore is the writer. Alan Moore is the director. Alan Moore is the editor. He does all of those aspects in his script writing. He's very specific on what he wants to be seen on the page, drawn on the page, to the point of having minutia in the pictures. I want a clock with a bell on top, and I want it in the bottom left hand of the panel on the forefront, so the character is behind the clock. He goes into so much detail about what he wants to see on the picture. Now, some artists like this. They want clear, concise direction. I don't know what to draw. You tell me what you want to see, and I will draw it. Other artists want to take the words of the writer and make it their own. So, for example, so to compare the two, Alan Moore's script is going to look... Oh, I've already started it, so let's continue. In the foreground of the panel, there is also a duck walking across the front of a TV stand. In the back of the panel on the wall, there is a poster. It is the poster for Interview with the Vampire. There is also a poster next to it at an odd angle, 30 degrees. And on that poster is Kate Moss, the model. But you need to draw her so it looks reminiscent of this poster. And I've included the reference to this poster, but we don't want it to be specifically Kate Moss. We want it to look like her, so it's very... that it shows that it is her, but it is not her. And then, also, the character is also going to be slightly bent over with a slight hunch. I could go on, but this is an Alan Moore script. This is a description of a single panel on a page. He will tell you the type of panel he wants. He wants it to be a square panel, a long panel, very, very specific in what he wants. Other scripts I've read... and this is not the style I use, but other scripts will have something along the lines of the two characters walk in the room and engage in a fight. That's it. That's all they got. So the artist can interpret that and say, okay, well, the fight. Okay, well, is it going to take a whole page? They can determine if it's going to be a fight that lasts two or three pages or lasts a single panel. Or is multiple panels on a page? Who's doing the hitting? Who's in, like, the artist can interpret exactly what they want to do with it, and that's how other script writers work. It's all depending on who you're working with. Some artists are really good at telling a story with their pictures, and they're very good storytellers in their own right. And in some ways, the writer is the writer, and the artist is the director of the scene. In the Alan Moore scenario, Alan Moore does it all. And the artist is merely the cinematographer that is doing exactly what he's being told by the director. So that is the difference. So comic book writing, if you look at it from an Alan Moore perspective, is really complicated, really lengthy, and potentially even more in detail, or a harder task than writing a novel. When I wrote my comic scripts, I was basing it off Alan Moore, I guess, because my scripts are incredibly detailed, and too much so that it was probably daunting for an artist, which is probably why it took me so long to hook up with an artist. When I finally did hook up with Jenna on the Simca comic, she saw my scripts and like, okay, whatever, but I'm gonna go my own direction. So she actually changed what she was doing, or changed what I had laid out and done in her own way. So for example, I had 22 pages listed in my first comic with a set number of panels. No. She increased the number of pages. She had more splash pages or more panels that were larger. And she just kind of went in the direction she wanted. When I saw it originally, and because I was such a rookie at it, I'm like, oh my God, what are you doing? Like, this is not what I intended. It's too many pages now. And when we print this thing, we're going to have to go, you know, we're going to have to go over, and it's not going to fit the format, and I want it to fit in the comic rack at the comic shop. It was eye-opening, but after that point is when I realized, hey, there's different forms of scripts, and you always cater your script to the artist you're working with. I did draw the first, you know, 5 or 6 pages of my comic myself when I decided to go with an artist, because it was just too time consuming. And I'm not an excellent artist. So because I'm not an excellent artist, it took me longer to draw, because I would draw, erase, you know, I'd blue line it in, and then I would, you know, draw over with the blue lines, and then it was so lengthy. I mean, it looked good, I guess, but I was so specific in my direction. I spent so much time on the script side to tell myself what I was drawing that, you know, I probably could have spent more time just drawing it, but when I write the script, I'm drawing it in my head of what I want it to look like, and, you know, to what I'm leading towards. So all those that look down on comic book writers, all those that look down on script writers, all those that look down on game writers, fully on you. It's a hard job that we do. Very hard job. So that's what I want to talk about today. Probably boring for some of you, but it was good to get it off my chest. So what is this? So this is going to take you into the last part of my podcast today, which showcases writing in a game and how different it is and how improvisational. A year of game time ago, the group I'm in, so this is all in all, if you look at actual game time, if we were gaming once a week, this campaign has probably lasted about two and a half years. The first year, the first chapter of the game led to a big point. And the second part of the game, which we started well over a year ago, but probably 1 year of game time if you're gaming every week, we finally got to the culmination this weekend. And the culmination was huge. And the culmination didn't come about from my part. The players culminated this part of the game. And what I mean is, when you're game mastering, as I mentioned before, it's a lot of improvisational writing is the way to look at it. You planned that the characters were going to go to this town, and once they arrived in that town, they're going to meet someone who might reveal a plot point to them. And that is kind of what you plan in your head. That's as heavy as I plan, because you never know what your players are going to do. So this is pretty much what I plotted. They're going to get this town. They're going to make a realization, something in this town, and I didn't flesh it out totally. But if they spoke to this person, or that person, they may get plot points that are going to help them along. So on the travels to there, I don't plan my encounters like I used to. There's certain encounters that I will plan. If they hit a couple of triggers, it will lead to the encounter that I planned. But generally, it's random encounters along the way, purely randomly rolled. And in this case, they were traveling to the city I wanted them to go to pick up some of those plot points. And after a lot of negotiation, they did decide to go in that general direction. They decided to go to that town. But along the way, random encounters popping up. The one random encounter that popped up that they were going to encounter was a unicorn, purely random, and a bunch of fairies. Now, I don't know if the listeners of the podcast are not D&D-centric. Unicorns are essentially very good creatures. They're very intelligent. They have lots of magical powers. And fairies the same. Can you fight them? Sure, you could attack fairies and unicorns and the like. But generally, if you're going to encounter these creatures, they're generally benevolent creatures. Benevolent. You know what I mean. Anyway, so purely randomly, they encounter these creatures in a section of forest where I did determine that there would be not necessarily unicorns, but a good faction they could encounter that might help them along their way with some clues, the clues that would lead them to some plot points once they got to the city. So, purely random, this is what they're encountering. So this is what they've got, this is what they're coming up against. And the way they played it out, I gave them all of the plot points in one fell swoop, purely on gameplay. I did not intend a random encounter to lead them to the path of what is going to happen in the game. It was a beautiful moment. It was great. So everything they've been working towards this last year, everything came unrolling all in one grand gesture. And a lot of things got fixed. A lot of things that they kind of screwed up along the way. A couple things, you know, not screwed up, but it made their trip a lot harder, a lot more difficult. One of the characters had been cursed, was able to remove the curse, but in a way that actually moved the story forward, instead of just, you know, deus ex machina, or machina, I should say. So they were able to move the plot forward. I was able to give them information I've been holding on for a year. And it was great. Those moments in game, if you're writing a novel, so this takes me right back to novel writing again. In a novel, when you're writing, if you follow the path of I write the skeleton of my story, this is going to happen on this chapter, and they're going to encounter this person, and this plot point is going to get revealed at this part of the book, that plot point is going to get revealed, and they're going to discover that so-and-so is the killer by the end of the book. That's general plotting of a book, and then you flesh it out when you're writing. In game time, in game terms, when you're writing the game, I didn't plot for this to happen. I knew they were going to uncover these particular plot points. The method they did was actually better than what I originally plotted out, and that is the joy of gaming, and that's why I like it so much. It's akin to playing live again. So if you're playing live and you're playing a song that you like, but you don't know if the crowd's going to like it, you don't know how the crowd's going to react to it, and you play this song live, and as you're playing it, you can feel the crowd going, wow, really like this song, and the crowd's really getting into it. They might be pumping their fists or whatnot. And you realize on stage in that moment, you and your band realize that, holy crap, this is the song. This is the song that is carrying us over. This is the song that is getting over. This is a song that is getting people to look up from their tables and go, holy crap, this band's pretty good. When you hit that moment live, you can react to it in different ways. And this is where improvisational is very important. And I've managed to be in a band a few times to reach that moment where you realize this is the barn burner song. You may have thought it was good, but you didn't know the crowd was going to react as well as they did. So you hit the song and maybe you extend the section a little bit, you know, and the crowd's going nuts, and there's a bridge in the song, and during the bridge, you know, as the vocalist, I'm talking to the crowd, just, you know, the crowd's already raised and the crowd's already getting off on the song, and then you just keep it going as you're talking. The band, you maybe cycle through that bridge, you know, one more time to let you talk, and the crowd is getting pumped and the crowd is going, and then when you break into the chorus the last time, you sing the chorus a couple more times than you normally would, that you did during rehearsal. And the crowd, because you've extended this 3-minute song maybe to 5 minutes or 7 minutes or whatever it is, and you're incorporating the crowd into the song, maybe you're getting the crowd to sing back with you, or whatever. That is the equivalent of what happened in that game. So the moment shows itself. It's a big moment in the game, not anything you planned, but you're able to run with it and go with it. I've been in bands before where, you know, improvisational jam happens on stage in the middle of a show and the crowd's really digging it and you keep going with it because, like, this is freaking working, man. To be able to catch that wave, because it's a big wave, if you can catch that wave, ride the wave, and keep the wave and stay on top of the wave, those moments are something else. And in writing, when you're writing by yourself, alone, in a room, in front of your laptop, or with your, you know, your paper in hand and a pencil, if that's the way you're going, you don't often get those rushes. You don't get that immediate justification for what you're doing, that immediate payoff. So sometimes writing, I really enjoy the process of writing in a game and being a little improvisational and a bit live with it, as I am performing live too. It's the same thing. When you're writing a song, you don't know how the crowd's going to react to the song. You don't know the song's going to be big until you've played it. You don't know how the song's going to go over. I mean, if you really like the song, you just play with your heart and you go with it and it works. And the same thing is in writing. So, but that improvisational part of it, I used to be afraid of. And now I'm so all about it. So that, there you go. So, what should I title this particular podcast today? Maybe it's called Improvisational Creation. Be a great name for a band, wouldn't it? All right, well, I'm going to sign off. This is Sean Arama from the Sean Geek Podcast on the road. Welcome, Podbean, to my little world. And we're going to be changing this podcast up. We're going to be, I'm working on a lot of different things behind the scenes to bring some more depth to this podcast. This podcast is not about music. This podcast is not about gaming. This podcast is not about writing. This podcast is not about comic books. It is about all of it as a whole. I don't want to limit this podcast to being about one thing. If you listen to the Chris Jericho podcast, for example, a great podcast, I want to shout out to Chris and his team of him over there. That is what a podcast, in my opinion, should be. The Nerdist podcast does it well as well. It's not about a topic. It's about everything. And I like that rounded aspect to their podcast. And I'm attempting to do the same thing. I'm not pigeonholing myself into a particular category, because none of you are pigeons. All right, so I'm going to sign off here. Great podcast today, guys. We'll talk to you next time on the Sean Geek Network. Goodbye.